Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Touchdown! Yes! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami!
Everybody, welcome to the Dolphins Daily. My name is Tom Ernesty. I'm filling in for Mike. We have a great show on hand for you today. First, we're going to be previewing this weekend's game with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers coming to the Hard Rock Stadium to take on the Miami Dolphins in a very much-needed win for the Miami Dolphins. And, of course, we know the struggles that this team has faced over the last few weeks. In addition to that, I am going to be speaking with Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket in South Florida. You can hear him and DJ Williams from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. prior to kickoff every Sunday. Also, you can follow him on Twitter at Greg Likens. We're going to be having a great conversation with him. We're going to be talking about Dolphins, and we'll also dive into a little bit on the Miami Hurricanes and their chances of winning the ACC and getting in the college football playoffs. So, first, let's dive into this game that we have to talk about here this weekend. The Dolphins are coming in for after three straight defeats on primetime, two in utterly embarrassing fashion, one 40-0 shutout against the Baltimore Ravens, and then last Monday night, a 45-21 drubbing at the hands of the Carolina Panthers, and that Oakland Raider game of 27-24 mixed in between. A lot of things need to go right for the Miami Dolphins to take care of business this weekend, but we will dive into that here in a few minutes. First, in regards to the game preview, we know who we're going to be seeing at quarterback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It will not be Jameis Winston. It'll be our old foe, Ryan Fitzpatrick. He was the quarterback in the first game they played last year in South Florida, where Kenyon Drake returned the touchdown to win the football game. We know what we're getting and what we're seeing out of Ryan Fitzpatrick. We're going to get a guy that's going to be very conservative, as well as taking some risks down the football field. He is a turnover-prone quarterback, so hopefully the defense can take advantage of that. After that, the ground game for the Buccaneers really has not come to fruition with Doug Martin back in the fold. Doug Martin, who signed a new deal with the team, he is averaging 3.27 yards per carry this year and two touchdowns. So the Dolphins defense needs to step up, make sure Doug Martin is contained, and they can get back to playing very solid defense, where over the last three games, we did not see the same defense that we saw in the first six. Our old foe, Brent Grimes, will be on the other side of the field, and I'm sure Miko will be somewhere in the building. If she's smart, she probably won't be there, but because I'm sure some of the fans will have a lot to say to her and the comments that she made about the football team. But Brent will be welcome back, probably to a course of booze would be my guess. And, you know, Brent was a very good football player for the Miami Dolphins coming off that Achilles injury. Wished him the best going into Tampa, but it looks like he's been struggling a little bit this season. So hopefully that, Jay Cutler can attack that. So coming into this game right now, we don't have the final list for injuries, but we know that Robert Ayers is questionable. J.R. Sweezy is also questionable, the starting offensive guard. Gerald McCoy is questionable as well. And William Golston will be out of this football game. In regards to the Dolphins, we have a bunch of players that are listed as questionable. All of them did play on Monday Night Football, so I would not expect, based on the fact that there's really no injuries on Monday Night, that we will see, Michael Thomas, Bobby McCain, William Hayes, and Ndamukong Suh suiting up this week for the Miami Dolphins. Let's get into the keys of the game. The biggest key in this football game, and we really have seen this over the last few weeks, is that the defense needs to get pressure on the quarterback. Very limited exposure to the backfield of the opposing team recently. Cameron Wake looks a little bit slower than normal. And he's been chipped, he's been blocked, and unfortunately he's just not getting to the quarterback, and neither is, you know, rookie Charles Harris as well as Andre Branch and William Hayes. So they really need to turn up the pressure, they need to turn up the heat, and they need to rattle Ryan Fitzpatrick. You cannot let him get comfortable, because he is a good quarterback if he's not getting tagged. You know, if he's forced out of the pocket, he can scramble. So the Dolphins need to make sure they stay at home, stay in the lanes, and make sure that they get after Ryan Fitzpatrick. If you can hit him at the beginning of the game, he is going to flinch, and he is going to turn the ball over, and that's going to really help the Dolphins' cause to try to get walk away with a win, where they're 2-1 in Hard Rock Stadium this season. The second key to this game and to get a victory is to establish Kenyon Drake in the running game. You know, I've been promoting Kenyon Drake personally for the last few games, and from what I've seen out of him at this point, he needs to get the rock. He needs to be able to do the things that a running back needs to do. He is a very dynamic player out of the backfield. We know he can catch passes, as well as we know what he can do with the ball in his hand in open space. He has made a huge difference in the offense. Not saying that, you know, he's better than Jay Ajayi, because that would be a false statement. Jay Ajayi was a great running back for this football team, and just kind of wore out his welcome. But Kenyon Drake at this point has proven he can do very well. He has 11 catches for 52 yards out of the backfield, and he has 26 carries for 176 yards running the ball. That's a 6.8 yard average, and his long, of course, was the Monday nighter against the Carolina Panthers, where he busted off a 66 yard touchdown run, and that run really shows what kind of player Kenyon Drake can be. And he's only in his second season. He's 23 years old. He's got a lot of tread on those tires, because he was a backup running back in college, and he's a backup running back at this point. He kind of reminds me of Ronnie Brown. Ronnie Brown split carries with Cadillac Williams in college, and Ronnie Brown was actually taken before Cadillac Williams because of the tread on the tires. Kenyon Drake can fly. He's 6'1", 211 pounds, so he's not a small running back. He is a difficult tackle. They have to get after it, and it really starts up front. The offensive line has to do a better job making sure that they can open up the running lanes as well as protect the quarterback. Obviously, those two important things can help the offense put up more points, and the fact that they've just continuously struggled to do anything over these last few weeks, really two out of the last 3 weeks, because the Raiders game, the offense was fairly decent. They moved the ball pretty well. They've got to figure it out, and this is the perfect team to do it against. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, for all intents and purposes, have struggled themselves. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that the Dolphins can do. You know, the Buccaneers give up on average 109.9 yards per game on the ground, and they give up 276 yards in the air, where the Dolphins only average 80 yards on the ground and 209 in the air. This could be an advantage. This is something they can take advantage of to really get the ball down the field and open up more running lanes for Kenyon Drake as well as Damian Williams. But I really believe that Kenyon Drake needs to get the ball more often. Another big thing outside of just rattling Ryan Fitzpatrick and stopping Doug Martin is you have to keep DeSean Jackson and Mike Evans in check. Mike Evans is coming off a suspension for his role in a little brawl in New Orleans. He is a very dynamic and I'll dare to say a top five wide receiver in the NFL. He's a big body guy. He can go up and get the football at the high point, and he can burn you off the line of scrimmage with his physicality. He's a guy that Xavier Howard and Kadarius Tankersley really need to keep in check. Don't be surprised to see Bobby McCain shadowed to his side of the field to make sure that they cover all the bases. But the pass defense being having some issues and having some difficulties over the last few weeks, they're going to look to exploit that with DeSean Jackson as well. Both of those guys have a big opportunity to really burn this secondary. that has struggled over the last few weeks. So hopefully they can contain those two wide receivers as well, and bring a W this week. For the Dolphins, other than establishing Kenyon Drake, we got to see some downfield passes. You know, a lot of us are wondering, you know, you bring in Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler has a big arm. He can throw the ball down the field and everything else that goes with Jay Cutler. We haven't seen it this season at all. You know, Jay Cutler's numbers are not fantastic. Let's just leave it like that. His yards per attempt is just absolutely atrocious in comparison to the rest of the quarterbacks in the NFL. Right now, Jay Cutler's numbers are a little head-scratching, especially from what we saw last year with Ryan Tannehill. This year, Cutler is 65.3% completion percentage with 5.87 yards per attempt, and 12 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. So the numbers look okay on paper. Those are almost the equivalent numbers of what Ryan Tannehill produced at this point last season, but the quarterback rating being at 86.7 as well. So he's right on his career average. The issue is that the ball is just not getting down the field. And I'm not sure if this has anything to do with the offensive line and the awful play from it. Is it the play calling being too conservative? But Jay Cutler needs to unload the football this weekend, and he needs to do it against a susceptible secondary. I mean, this defense does give up a lot of yards through the air. They need to get Devontae Parker down the field. They need to get Kenny Stills involved, and obviously Jarvis Landry has to get involved as well, and not just the three-yard passes, the bubble screens that just haven't seemed to work this season. They got to find ways to get these guys the football, and they have to do it more frequently and early and often in this football game to really set the tone and put this team away quickly. You know, if you can put up some points on the Bucs, Ryan Fitzpatrick's not a quarterback that can bring a team back if they're down 2 scores early in the football game. And that leads me to my last piece of a key to victory. The Dolphins have to start fast. They have to put up points on their opening drive. They have to do it. And the reason is that we play from behind. Out of the 9 games played this year, the Dolphins have played from behind in 8 of them. 8 out of 9 games, this team is down at halftime at least 2 scores. So this is something that needs to change. It has to change this week for them to be successful against the New York Jets. In regards to our prediction for this game, I had this game in week 1. Before Hurricane Irma came by and ruined week 1. So this was supposed to be the bye week. And with all the struggles that both of these teams are having, the injury bug, as well as some inconsistent quarterback play, and of course not having that bye week, both of these teams are struggling. The Bucs coming at 3-6 and Dolphins being at 4-5. I believe the Dolphins will come away with a victory. I think that the home advantage of being back in your home stadium is going to play a big role. The team's going to be fired up to be back at home and put those games in the past. But as long as you can establish the run, throw the ball down the field, and really get after Tampa Bay's offense and shut them down early and get some points up early, I think the Dolphins will come away with a victory. I believe the final score will be 21-17. The Dolphins will come away with the win to move the record to 5-5. And depending on how these rest of these games go this weekend, dare I say they're going to be in the mix again for a wild card. Yes, they're behind Baltimore and Oakland now. Yes, they're behind Jacksonville and Buffalo. Buffalo made a change of quarterback. I don't think Jacksonville can maintain what they're doing. From an offensive perspective, they've actually been decent. But I believe that we'll see the Blake Bortles that we all know and love. The Bills changing a quarterback with Peterman is a head scratcher, being that they are in a playoff spot. Yes, Tyrod Taylor has struggled. Yes, he's not a great quarterback, but the team is winning, and they were 5-2 prior to their previous 2 losses. So putting him in and the schedule getting tougher, the Bills might fall off grace. Baltimore, the same thing. They struggle from time to time. They're coming off their bye week after a big loss to the Minnesota Vikings, and the Raiders are very inconsistent, and their schedule is also tough. So with the Dolphins having a tough schedule, they need to get this win. They need to get to 5-5 before their next game, which is a doozy, of course, against the New England Patriots. So a lot of work has to be done to try to get into the playoffs, but it all starts this week. And let's get a win this week and get to 5-5 and see where it goes from there. That'll do it for the game preview. We're going to take a real short break from one of our sponsors, and I'll bring in Greg Likens from 790 The Ticket, and obviously the former show from the Miami Dolphins called The Finsiders. He will be joining me here on the podcast, and we will be right back.
Hey guys, Randy again. Let me tell you guys about Sinbad Sports. Sinbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get your Miami Dolphins memorabilia, your Miami Marlins, your Miami Heat, your Hurricanes, your Florida State Seminole, pretty much any type of memorabilia. Sinbad Sports has had the likes of Rashad Jones, Cam Wake, Jarvis Landry, and more in autograph signings within just the past year alone. So when in South Florida area, visit Sinbad Sports at 2164 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you. Fins up, guys.
All right, I would like to welcome into the podcast. Many of you know him from the Finsiders with the Miami Dolphins, and now you can hear him on 790 The Ticket. Greg Likens, thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Tom. Good to talk to you. How's everything going?
It's going well. Unfortunately, not for the Miami Dolphins over the last 3 weeks, but we'll get into that topic here in a minute. Mike, who runs our website, is born and bred Syracuse, and I know you are a diehard Syracuse basketball fan. So do you think Syracuse can return to the NCAA tournament this year, and will Boeheim coach forever at this point? Because it just doesn't seem like he's going to retire.
No, I you know what? I would guess that Jim Boeheim, and you're right, it seems like he may just continue until eternity, but I would guess that he's going to continue at least through the time that his youngest son, Buddy, is in school, who's committed for next year. So his older son, Jimmy, is a freshman at Cornell. They faced each other last Friday night. So I think Buddy, who's committed for next year, if he's there for 4 years, Jim Boeheim will be there for 4 years, and then that might be the time for him to sign off for what's been a tremendous career. But getting back to the NCAA tournament, I certainly hope so. I mean, I think it's way too early to say no definitively. I know they need a lot of young players to step up and develop throughout this season, and the ACC, toughest conference in basketball, so it could be difficult. But I remain cautiously optimistic about the upcoming season. If Tyus Battle is the superstar we think he is, then that's a good start.
It'll be interesting to see how the NCAA season plays out. Obviously, the UCLA stuff with the Ball family continues to be in the news, but that's a whole other show and a whole other topic in regards to basketball. But let's get into the meat and potatoes of what we want to talk about today, which is the Miami Dolphins. We are now a year and a half with Adam Gase and his time as the head coach. If you were to give him a grade right now, and what would you say his grade would be?
You know, I would give him a B, and I think that's fair. I mean, certainly going to the playoffs in your first season is something that he should be applauded for, and I think, you know, gives him more benefit of the doubt than, say, a different coach who's just been with a team for a year and a half. So with that in mind, certainly the other half that is more recent, it hasn't been anything to write home about, and certainly this season has seen so many different issues pop up both on and off the field. But so far, I mean, when you put together the overall record and you look at what he's accomplished in a year and a half, going to the playoffs last year, which I think surprised all of us considering that 1-4 start, I think that stands for something. I think Stephen Ross believes in him, and I don't think there's going to be any changes anytime soon in terms of the coaching, the head coaching position with Adam Gase. So I'd say a B, but with that being said, that grade is kind of slowly going downwards if this season continues the way it is. So certainly the NFL is difficult year in and year out, but this second season has proven to be much more challenging for Adam Gase than perhaps we all anticipated for a number of different reasons.
I agree with the grade of B, you know, and we could always have it worse. We could have hired Hugh Jackson. You know, I don't think there's a coach that got hired in the same year as Gase that's had as worse luck as Hugh Jackson in Cleveland with only one win. And I think it was 23 games at this point. It's not good. So, you know, we're very fortunate to have Adam Gase, but are you a bit surprised with his play calling this year and the lack of deep passes, knowing Jay Cutler can throw the rock down the football field? You know, the strength of this team and the quality at wide receiver, you know, Miami seems really content to throw the ball in the check down area with the running backs and the short slants to the wide receivers. Do you find that surprising?
Yeah, that's been one of the most stunning developments of this year. I mean, right before the season started, when we knew Jay Cutler was going to be the quarterback, my opinion on what the season would look like was that the defense would struggle and that offensively it would be an exciting team to watch because Jay Cutler likes to take chances, likes to throw the ball down the field historically in the previous 11 years in his career. And when all the hype entering the year was about that receiving core, which you just mentioned, you know, I think highlighted by Devontae Parker's development, because that's what got everybody excited, and knowing that that is his specialty. He can get down the field, he can win jump balls, and he and Jay Cutler seem to build really good chemistry right off the bat in preseason. So the fact that we haven't seen that develop more, and I understand that Parker's been on and off the field in terms of the injuries, but that's been a real head scratcher to me. And I mean, looking at Adam Gase as a whole, the fact that they're averaging 15 points a game for dead last in an offense happy, pass happy NFL, that's a shocker as well, knowing that he is the one who's in charge of the offense. So knowing what Jay Cutler brings to the table, I was expecting a roller coaster ride, some bad interceptions. We know what comes with that package, but I certainly was hoping that some of those would come by throwing the ball down the field, and I'm not sure why they've been so cautious with some of these underneath routes. I mean, Jarvis Landry's putting up the same stats that we've become accustomed to, but I certainly agree with you. I thought there was going to be more down the field attempts, at least. Whether they were successful is another thing.
I'm very taken back by the way he's been running the offense. Now, when he came into last year, we kind of saw the same thing with Ryan Tannehill until they found a balance in the offense. And then Tannehill was fantastic throwing the football down the field. If I'm not mistaken, he was a top two or top three quarterback last year in passes of 20-plus yards and completion percentage. And I believe he was number one in the league on balls in the air over 40 yards. With the influx of quarterback right now, Jay Cutler, we're assuming, is not coming back next year. And Matt Moore, I believe, is also may not come back next year. What do you feel the chances are that, you know, Ryan Tannehill will be the number one guy, but do they go on the draft and find a prospect quarterback to develop behind Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah, I mean, more and more as the season has progressed, I think Ryan Tannehill will be back, but I think it could be in a position where he is kind of a placeholder. Now, Adam Gase has long since he started has said that if you have the talent, if you have the work ethic, and you go out there, it doesn't matter your pedigree, your background, we will give you the opportunity to earn a right to play on Sunday. So, and he's proven that with some of the rookies, especially on the defensive line, that have gotten playing time above, say, like a Jordan Phillips. But as it pertains to the quarterback, I think that Ryan Tannehill will be back, but he may be back just kind of keeping the seat warm for whoever they draft in a high position, because the more and more the season goes on, I'm thinking that may be the direction they need to go. Tannehill did play well last year after they got comfortable in the offense. I think it's a shame that he got hurt when he did, because by all accounts, and I was around him in training camp a little bit, and he seemed as confident as ever that he's been in his career in this offense, and leadership had taken off. But you know, I think one of the issues that we've seen pop up now through nine games is that even though Adam Gase will deny it, I think they have overestimated the overall talent on this roster that they had. So I think it wouldn't be out of the question for them to develop, get a quarterback high in the draft and develop him and have Adam Gase finally obtain his guy that he can really be accountable for and he can develop along the way as the head coach of the Dolphins.
We're talking about the offense with Adam Gase, and of course we're talking to Greg Likens right now. Let me ask you your opinion on this. Jay Ajayi, we saw, surprisingly traded before the trade deadline a couple weeks ago. He's clearly a talented player and was on a rookie contract, and with the move that they made and the reasons why they made the move to send him to Philly for a fourth-round draft pick, do you find that Gase kind of gave up too quickly on Jay Ajayi, knowing that, you know, he kept him home last year in week one, and it sounds like there's some rumblings of some issues in the locker room with him again this year? Do you think Gase would have had to sit him down again and get his head straight the way he did last year? Or do you think that was a good move to trade Jay Ajayi and just move on from him at this point?
I thought it was a terrible move by the Miami Dolphins because, you know, it'd be one thing if they got, you know, and I know this seems out of the question, but a first or second round pick for him. But to get a fourth round pick for a guy who's coming off a Pro Bowl season, who's still in the prime of his career, I don't understand the logic at all. Now, I do get the fact that if a player has attitude problems before he's ever established himself in the league, you know, if we go back to what you just referred to before last season having to be kept at home when they go across the country to play the Seahawks, then certainly you can understand there are some attitude issues in general, and you can imagine those would get even worse should you have success. But I don't think the Miami Dolphins are in a position, despite the 10-win season a year ago, to be giving up on top-level talent so quickly. I just think there's got to be a better resolution to this than just to ship them out of town. And whether that's to bench them, take away playing time, I just don't like the idea of giving up talent and an asset so easily. And, you know, it'd be different if Kenyon Drake and Damian Williams were some world beaters behind them, but all we heard after Ajayi was traded from Adam Gase was that he wanted to get younger at the position. Well, that doesn't make any sense because Kenyon Drake's only 7 months younger than Jay Ajayi, and Damian Williams is older. Now, Drake has proven to be a guy who can, you know, hit the deep run and be, I think, a difference maker. But that begs the question, why wasn't he playing more in a complementary role to Ajayi to begin with? So there are a lot of questions and critical responses, I think, to this decision by Adam Gase and the Miami Dolphins. And quite frankly, I don't agree with it. And one final thought on that, if the Baltimore Ravens game was their last straw with Jay Ajayi, I would ask you this. Go back and watch the tape. Which running back in the league could have run behind that offensive line the way it was blocking? I don't think that's on Jay Ajayi. I don't think that's on any of the running backs for the Dolphins. I think that's on the offensive line, whether Adam Gase wants to admit it or not.
I agree with you there, and I've taken a lot of criticism. I've been very high on Kenyon Drake since we drafted him last year. Do you see him taking more carries away from Damian Williams? He started the last two games in regards to Williams over Kenyon Drake, but as Drake came into the game against the Raiders as well as against the Carolina Panthers, he busted off two very long runs, and you could see how quickly he hits the hole and goes. Do you think we have Kenyon Drake as the starting running back potentially for the rest of this season? And is the running back position another thing that the Miami Dolphins have to address in the offseason?
Well, I don't know if it matters if he starts or not. You know, I understand what you're saying. I think it's just more of he should get the bulk of the carries. I think he's proven over the first 2 weeks, and, you know, put the fumble aside, which certainly was costly against the Raiders, he's a difference maker. You can just tell. I mean, if he gets more opportunities, I think the better chance there is for him to break off another long run. And Damian Williams, I think, is a solid running back, but I don't think he has that special quality that Drake has. If he gets an opening, he can turn what would routinely be a 5-yard run into a big game. So I agree with you. I think Kenyon Drake has got a lot of talent. It's just a matter of getting him more touches. And I think from what he's proven through 2 weeks now, post Jay Ajayi, he deserves that. In terms of addressing the running back position in the offseason, I think that they'll need to. They need to get another guy in here that reliably can be more of a power runner, like Jay Ajayi brought that skill set to the table. But for now, I think Kenyon Drake should get the bulk of the carries for this Dolphins team.
You mentioned the offensive line in Baltimore and how atrocious they have truly been this year. After making decent strides last year, they just seem the Miami Dolphins just cannot get it right, and they haven't been getting it right on the offensive line really since 2008 or 2009, when the offensive line was actually really good. Outside of Laremy Tunsil, Do you think they will finally spend money on the interior of the offensive line? And regarding the interior, is Mike Pouncey going to be back next year, knowing how much he struggled this year?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting topic, Tom, because in hearing Adam Gase describe it, Mike Pouncey's been a terrific player this season. And so, you know, I think we always have this back and forth between, you know, our eye test and the statistics that are resulted at the end of a game and see that the running game has struggled. They're giving up sacks. They're giving up pressures. You got Pro Football Focus weighing in, and then you got the coaching staff who's evaluating the tape on their own. Mike Pouncey certainly is an injury risk. He's owed a lot of money. Do they get out of that contract for those purposes? It's a possibility. But you just have to scratch your head a little bit knowing the investment they've made on the offensive line with, you know, those three guys in Pouncey, Juwan James, and on the outside, Laremy Tunsil, all being first-round picks. And, you know, the fact that they haven't come together more, and obviously James now being out for the season, is unfortunate. But I think all possibilities are on the table, though it does sound like Adam Gase really likes Mike Pouncey. So my gut feeling is he'll be around some more. The question I would have just in general is how much more money or draft picks or assets can you invest in this offensive line? Certainly they need to upgrade the guard positions, but I guess the question would be at what cost as it relates to the rest of the roster as well. So that's one of the many questions that, Tom, I feel like we've been asking that for years with this.
It has been.
Yeah, so
it really has been.
We'll continue to do so in the years to come, I guess.
Now, you're the host in South Florida, in the South Florida market, and have a good feel of the region. You know, do you feel the interest in the NFL and the Miami Dolphins is down this year due to the national anthem controversies? As we have three Miami Dolphin players kneeling before every game, or do you feel like that's an overblown story at this point?
Well, I think, you know, some of the interest is down for a multitude of reasons, you know, whether it be the quality of the play, whether it be oversaturation of having games Thursday night, Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, Monday night. And then I do think that there is, and I don't know what percentage, but some percentage of fans that are turned off by the national anthem controversy. And, you know, it's certainly, I think the whole purpose behind it, the message behind it, kind of got muddied a little bit when the president weighed in, and then everybody seemed to want to take a knee just to get back at him. And so then, you know, I thought the story was pretty much almost dead before that all happened, and now certainly it remains a hot topic. I can tell you this, I've heard from people and taken phone calls and interactions on the radio in South Florida, some people completely turned off by it. But I don't get a good feel on what percentage of the fan base that is, and whether those people are really diehard fans or not. So I think it certainly played a part. How big of a part is difficult to tell. But I just hope at some point we can just focus on football. Not to say that the causes aren't important, but at the end of the day, Tom, I think if you and I are talking about the Dolphins winning and they've got a winning record and they're in the playoff mix, I think we probably forget about some of this other stuff.
Absolutely. Winning cures all the ills of really everything when it comes to sport. Speaking of something that is a win, is Stephen Ross created RISE. And he believes that sports can help improve racial equality in America. What are your thoughts about, you know, the level of what Stephen Ross has brought to the table in regards to trying to get everybody, you know, together, everyone in regards of an equal aspect? You know, some of the players are spending time with the police. They created a foundation within the organization outside of RISE to raise money for certain causes, with, you know, Michael Thomas, Kenny Stills, kind of leading the charge with that as well. What do you feel about RISE and how that is impacting not only just the Miami Dolphins, but really the community itself?
Yeah, I think Stephen Ross should be applauded for that, for his willingness and openness to embrace diversity and not just, you know, make a comment about it, but to actually take the initiative to start the organization and get his players involved. And by all accounts, in interacting with some of his players, I mean, he remains very involved in their lives, in addition to, you know, them being football players, but as people. So, you know, he is not just talk the talk, he's walk the walk. I think he deserves credit for donating the $500 million to renovate that stadium, which is now a beautiful and looks brand new. So he deserves a lot of credit for all of that. Where I criticize Stephen Ross is just some of these issues that have happened behind the scenes, whether it be decisions to keep a coach or get rid of a general manager or vice versa, and some of the leadership, the people of leadership that he's put in place underneath him, I think where you can come into question Stephen Ross. But there's no questioning his devotion to some great causes on and off the field and his determination to get a winner with the Miami Dolphins. I think all of that, certainly, he deserves credit for. But I do think that some of the dysfunction that we've seen within the organization, unfortunately, whether he has anything to do with it, he's the guy in charge, so the blame partially falls on him.
Do you believe, Dan Marino is within the organization. He's kind of hand-in-hand with Tom Garfinkel. Do you believe at any point Stephen Ross might tap Dan Marino on the shoulder and say, I want you to be the VP of this football team?
Well, here's the thing. I don't know if Dan Marino is interested in that. And, I've been around Dan Marino a number of times, and we all know it was well-publicized when they had hired him for a very brief period of time before he decided he didn't want to do that. I think he's much more involved now, and I think his presence, along with any other great player that the organization has had, being around the players and being around the front office, is only a positive. But I don't know if he wants to put in the time it takes to review game film of hundreds of college players who are pro prospects, and on a weekly basis watching film to determine, which street free agents they want to pick up. And I mean, there's just a lot of nitty gritty hard work that goes into it for a guy who can make a ton of money by just going to a couple of speaking engagements per year, So I'm not sure. I think if he decided that he wanted to commit himself to doing that, like some of his friends and former peers, like a John Elway, then I think that he'd be a great choice. But I don't think at this point in his life that he necessarily wants to devote all of his time and dedication to doing a job that takes all of that time and dedication.
Well, it'll be interesting to see down the road for sure. One last question, and we definitely did talk about, where this team is going to go, and there's been one player in mind that has been constantly talked about in Miami, and it's Jarvis Landry. We know that he's up for a contract, and the Dolphins were non-committal to him in giving him that extension in the offseason, so he's riding out his final year. Knowing that the Dolphins have tremendous holes all over the field, you just paid Kenny Stills, you still have Devontae Parker for another, I believe it's a year or two, under contract. Do you think the Dolphins shell out the money to keep Jarvis Landry in Miami, or do you feel that they move on and spend the money elsewhere?
Well, if I were the Miami Dolphins, I would pay Jarvis Landry. Now, I say that with the caveat that it needs to be within reason. Certainly, he's going to get a ton of money. in the grand scheme of things, all this money is kind of crazy money anyway that all these professional athletes are getting. But he's going to get paid really well. But I don't think he deserves to be paid as a top 10 wide receiver in the entire league, considering he's not a dynamic downfield threat like some of those other guys are. So I think if they can get him a fair contract where he's going to make, $10 to $12 million, but not be making the $15, $16, $17 million that some of the other guys are, then I think that's fair and you should keep him around, because for as much criticism as he's received for not scoring enough touchdowns, well, he now has 5 touchdowns this season in 9 games. So he's putting that to rest a little bit. For all the criticism of him not running routes properly and the rumors about him not doing his homework, like I guess we're associating that comment with Jay Ajayi now that he's gone, I just think Jarvis Landry is the engine that makes this offense go. And I would equate him with Rashad Jones on defense. I think those two players are indispensable for this team. So for as much as you can criticize the lack of down-the-field threat, criticize his per-catch average, just being under 8 yards per catch and all of this, I think that is short-sighted, and that there are a few players that this applies to, but I think it applies to him. There's an intangible that he brings to the table that is hard to put a dollar's number on and hard to really equate into anything that's tangible. And I think that there's a reason his nickname is Juice. He gets everybody fired up, so I'm a big Jarvis Landry fan. I think they should keep him around. But you bring up some very valid points about some of the other money that's already been dedicated to the position and, you know, big picture on the roster, what they're going to try to do. But I think you got to try to make it work with Jarvis Landry because, to me, he's an indispensable player for what they've been able to accomplish.
And I agree with you. Even if they have to use the franchise tag on him this year to keep him in-house, you get him back with Ryan Tannehill, and those two have been masterful prior to Tannehill's injury in regards of Landry setting the NFL record in catches in his first three seasons. And just the dynamic of the offense, you know, he was over 10 yards per catch with Ryan Tannehill, and obviously dropping off with Jay Cutler, being that they're very two different quarterbacks, where it's still mind-boggling that we're not seeing much more in regards to downfield passing with this offense. We have a game to play this weekend. In the Rock, it is against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and our old friend Brent Grimes. We won't get into the wife conversation because that's just a wasted time. But where do you feel this team goes? Losing three straight, finally getting back home after a disappointing defeat the last time they were there against the Oakland Raiders. Where do you see this game going on Sunday?
Yeah, I think this is a terrific opportunity for them to get back on track after, you know, the three straight losses on national TV, two of them in really embarrassing fashion. But considering Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be playing quarterback, this is going to be as, I don't want to say easy, but if you're looking at the rest of the schedule and you're trying to identify where a win would come from, this would be your best opportunity to get that. So I think at home, a game that was rescheduled from week one after Hurricane Irma, and now this would be their bye week had that not occurred. I think they have to win this game. And the crazy thing about it, Tom, is that for as much as we can criticize this team and you can look at the statistics and it's been an ugly, ugly performance overall, both sides of the ball through nine games, they win this weekend, they're 5-5, and they're still very much alive in the wild card mix because the AFC hasn't proven to be as strong as some of the teams in the NFC. So, you know, it seems kind of crazy, and I think that the remainder of the schedule continues to get more difficult. But at 5-5 after 10 games, they'd still be very much in the mix. And so while I've come to expect the unexpected from this football team throughout the year, whether it be, you know, some of the shutouts or near shutouts in terms of that Jets game, I think this is a game that they can win and they should win come Sunday against the Bucs.
I certainly hope so. You know, getting to 5-5, very tough schedule towards the end of the year, as you mentioned. It's vital that they win this week. If they don't win this week, it's definitely an uphill battle. Even in a very weak AFC, it's definitely an uphill battle to try to get back into the playoff mix with as many holes in this roster. If they can find a way to get to 8-9 wins, I'd say that's a win with all the controversies and all the issues that this team has faced and not having a bye week. It would definitely be another tip to the cap to Adam Gase to getting these guys to perform under all these crazy circumstances. Greg, I really appreciate you coming on and talking Dolphins with us. Where can our fans follow you on Twitter or social media?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Greg Likens, just my name, GREGLIKENS. And usually on there you can I'll post when I'm going to be on the radio, but you can hear me every Sunday, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., excuse me, on the Aquan Orange pregame show with DJ Williams. So every game day we're getting you ready, and then you hear me throughout the week on 790 as well, but you can follow me on Twitter at Greg Likens.
Excellent. And one last prediction. Do the Miami Hurricanes make the college football playoff?
You know, that's been a positive story the last few weeks with with some of the downtrodden Dolphins performances, at least for the South Florida faithful. I'm going to say yes. I think that they can take care of business the next 2 weeks. It all come down to that Clemson game and the ACC championship. There's a scenario where if they lose a close game there, they could still make it. But, you know, for as negative as we can be about the Dolphins, I'm going to try to remain a positive outlook about the Miami Hurricanes and say that they surprise everybody in just the second year under Mark Richt and do make the college football playoff.
Excellent. Well, Greg, thank you again, and I hope you have a great day, and we'll hopefully talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.